Thank you very much, Neil, for the invitation and for the nice introduction. It's a great pleasure to talk to Predator all the time, always. So last time I've spoken on my work in the field of gravitational waves, mainly from LIGO and LISA, with this compact binary sources. So what I thought today of talking about is something slightly different. Another topic of my interest is cosmic microwave background. And there, I thought I was talking about some of my recent works on what can you understand about cosmic reionization using CMB. And that's the talk is going to be about. I will tell you about what kind of physical modeling of patchy reionization is required to actually get a better understanding of our observations. So to start, and about a basic of what we are going to talk about, is that the cosmic microwave background anisotropies are an excellent probe to the cosmic history. Back from the surface of last scattering around redshift of 1100 to something happening at today at redshift of zero. And that's such a very powerful probe helps us to understand everything happening in between by mainly three kinds of probes. We call it the temperature field, the E-mode polarization shown over here with these diagrams, and the B-mode polarizations. And I'm showing you last three decades of effort in measuring these maps with excellent precision by Kobe, WMAP, and Planck. You can see in every 10 years, we have got better in both sensitivity and angular resolution. And in the panel below, you are seeing the map of CMB polarization, which is currently mainly seen as an E-mode signal. And B-mode signal from the something between us and surface of large scattering due to weak lensing. We have not seen the holy grail of primordial gravitational wave in cosmic microwave background yet, but these are the probes which are going to use to measure that. And if you ask what is the statistical quantity we usually measure, and depending on that we do parameter estimation. That's called the cosmic microwave background power spectrum for temperature and the polarization field. I'm showing you here a plot from Planck, 2015 results at pole, bicep cake, and polar bear. In the first one you are seeing in the top left is that one from temperature, which matches very well with the lambda cold dark matter model, except of some small anomalies at low L. The same models fits well with the E-mode polarizations. That's the second curve in the left-hand side. I'm afraid it's possible you're not seeing my cursor. I'm sorry for that. But I think you can understand. The second plot from my left panel is the E-mode polarization mentioned over there. And the B-mode polarization coming from weak lensing as you can see a solid line, is what we have measured. But we have not yet measured the primordial gravitational wave shown by the dotted line around below L of 200 and so on. You can see these bumps. And by today's talk, I am not going to go into the details of a lot of physics which you can learn about the universe from cosmic microwave background, but I'm going to focus on a very narrow part in the amount of time the universe has spent there is the epoch called the epoch of reionization, when the universe have gone from a transition from a completely neutral phase to again a completely plasma phase. And to do that, let me first push the open questions in the topic. Why are this so interesting for the cosmologist? There are a few reasons. I have listed only a few of them which interest me, but this is certainly not the least which is exhausted. So you can, some of the questions which you still want to understand properly are like, when did reionization start? When did it end it? There are signatures that ended by a shift of about 6, but is it the right one, or is it there's a fluctuation? Is that? Is the reionization process a fast process or a slow process? Are they driven by lighter halos or massive halos? How inhomogeneous is the process of reionization? So when I'm telling you about all these processes, in top you are seeing a map. This is a map from one of our simulations, Well, you can see that yellow regions are the regions where it is completely ionized, okay? So that's the part which is at low redshift. So the extreme left part in this plot shows you something around redshift of 6. Extreme right part shows you deep in redshift of 20. So dark blue means it's all hydrogen, let's say. And in extreme yellow part means it's all in ionized form now. And in between, you can see the transition is happening. And that's the part which I'm going to talk about today, is that epoch of reionization. So let's at first ask, what are the imprints of reionization on cosmic microwave background? One of the very important flows is what we call as the optical depth, given by this equation, which is basically the line of sight integrated electron density. And this tells you that what is the typical overall, not into the fluctuation part, but the overall average electron density along my line of sight. And if such a quantity puts a very unique signature in the CMB polarization field, which is a bump you can see in this lower panel plots, a bump in the low L. And if this optical depth is large, that means your electron is, the universe has got ionized early enough. So you have a large value because of our integration over the co-moving length will be more. You get a slightly stronger bump, as you can see the, by the dark red lines, in comparison to the blue one when your tau, value of tau is small. So this is, you can see this is a very, very unique signature one can go and measure. And this is a plot from Planck 2018. And we would like to measure this. But there's a small problem. The problem is that it may not be very informative. I'll tell you about that soon. So what is the, right now, what current state of the art measurements has provided us, the value of tau as 0.058 with error bar 0.012 from temperature and low LE signal. And this is our current constraints on tau value. You can see from the left-hand side plot, the function of redshift, and the ionization history for a very simple model called the tan hyperbolic model. You can see here in the right-hand side corner. But now the question comes is how good is this probe? This is a nice probe, but is it very informative? Unfortunately, it's an average quantity. So it is not very susceptible to the details of the reionization history. If you can see this plot in the left-hand side panel, you can see that if I change reionization history abruptly from cyan to blue, red, all those curves, those all curves have a same value of tau or a same signature in the CLEE. You can see that in the right-hand side plot, which means this is an overall good quantity to tell me by when universe was typically ionized, but it is not very good probe to classify different models of the reionization history. What other probes do we have? Another interesting probe is the kinematic SUNY of Zeldovich signal, which is basically coming because of motion of this, so the bubbles or hot gases during the epoch of reionization, they are either moving towards us or away from us. As you can, I have tried to show them by this simple cartoon diagram with arrows. I've thrown a line of sight and there are small bubbles on which I have put arrows, okay? So they are moving away from me or towards me. And that generates another secondary anisotropy in the cosmic microwave background temperature field. And again, with the help of Planck, data joined with ACT and SPT, we are able to constrain this quantity. As of 2018, we are able to constrain it. The amplitude of KZ signal as a function of tau, you can see in the left-hand side plot below. And the reionization history. You see now, because KZ is a nice probe also to the reionization history, we can now start talking about what is the typical width of reionization denoted by this parameter delta Z, sorry. And what is the typical period when universe got 50% reionized, called ZRE. With this, now you can, so we have a slightly better understanding of the epoch of reionization using chase the signal. What other probe do we have?
Wait, Subhadeep, can I ask? So here you were showing, some sort of like average characteristic redshift and some width. From the low L polarization, do you not also constrain these two quantities?
We can, exactly. So there is some information in the shape, exactly, but it is not very informative because of the cosmic variance. So
the error bars from the low L polarization, you're saying they're larger than the error bars that you're showing from the KSZ?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
I am saying that you can include quite a few informations from higher KSZ signal to get some better understanding of the Z reionization width and this typical value. But some information people have explored, which is possible from this shape, okay? This CLBEE power spectrum shape, it will slightly change. And there is some information content, which we have not explored right away, but it is possible from S4. Or S Simons Observatory and CMB S4.
And is that because S4 will be closer to the cosmic variance?
Yes, exactly. And we can basically start using higher order statistics like TST power spectrum and T square to constrain much better the optical depth values.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah. But I will get back to that point towards the end of my talk, that how that is going to change in the future. Thanks. So I'll proceed now to tell you that what is the other probe which we have. Another probe, as I told you, there are three basic probes to study cosmic microwave background: temperature, E-mode polarization, and B-mode polarization. So now I'm talking to you about what is the key signature of this polar reionization on the B-mode polarization signal. And there are practically two signals. One is called the screening effect, which is important at small angular scales. Another effect is called the scattering, which is important at large angular scales. So let me tell you about both these effects again in a very simple way. So what is screening? Screening is, I have started telling you that universe got reionized. So there are these gases moving around. But reionization never happens isotropically. As you can see from this very simple simulation picture on top, if I throw you two different line of sights, the distributions of bubbles or the amount of reionization happened along each line of sight is going to be different. So by very intrinsic nature, reionization is patchy. Or this quantity I told you in the beginning about optical depth cannot be a constant quantity throughout the sky, but it's expected to have position dependence or optical depth as a function of sky position. If so, then what happens because of screening effect is that your primordial polarization signal at the surface of large scattering can be modulated by this anisotropic optical depth. Here I'm showing you in the left-hand side a map of the optical depth from our simulation, where you can see that there is a fluctuation on top of the mean value of 0.06 around. There's a fluctuation. So each of those line of sights, if there is a polarization field in the background, that is going to convert into some amount of E-mode and B-mode polarization. And that B-mode signal is something you can calculate. And from the amount of initial E-mode and the total fluctuation in the optical depth. Another interesting quantity, which plays a role in the large angular scale, is called the scattering effect. And scattering, you can think about simply, is a conversion from temperature to polarization. Here, screening is a conversion from primordial polarization signal to secondary polarization signal. So, and scattering is something which is a conversion from temperature to polarization. So what it is about? So let's take this simple diagram again. And I am trying now to show you that, let's say that I have focusing on only one electron, okay? In the left-hand side, I'm trying to focus only one electron from this hot bubble, this yellow patch. So at that redshift, that electron is seeing a local quadrupole. That's what I've shown from this left-hand side bottom panel, okay? So a local quadrupole anisotropy in the temperature field. And because when this electron is going through Thomson scattering, it will generate linear polarization. Now, because of the fluctuation in the electron density, this polarization will have both E mode and B mode signal. And this B mode signal is what is going to be a very interesting probe to study what we call as a passive reionization. And that's the signal which I'm talking, I've shown the formula here, which basically depends on the amount of power in the electron density shown by this PEE, and how much typical RMS fluctuations in the quadrupole field of temperature we have at, as a function of redshift. When you factor this all in, you can calculate how much the total signal you are expected in the B mode power spectrum from the effect cost catch field. So now let's summarize. I summarize the probes that what we have talked as of now. I have told you about three probes, okay? Kinematics in your observable signal, B mode polarization, and reionization probes. So these are the observables which are available to me from CMB. And on the other side, there's a parameter space of reionization which I need to understand. And what is that? I've already listed these questions before. So one of the job in our hand now is to connect these two, to connect the parameter in the physical space, which you want to understand, but you do not have direct handle on. And another is the probes, which you can explore from CMB maps, and how I can correctly connect these two sectors. And my remaining talk is basically going to be about this connection for reionization. And before I go into the details of what we are going to do, let us at first tell you what are the upcoming missions in the field of cosmic microwave background, which can do this job for us. We are basically in a very nice time now that we are having a chain of CMB experiments, either ongoing or upcoming. We have advanced AcPol from ground-based, then SPD3G. These both are ongoing and will be measuring CMB signal from very high L values, going beyond L of 2000. So that's the place one should be very interesting to probe reionization from, KZ. I'll talk about in details. Simons Observatory is going to start soon. Again, it's a very high angular resolution experiment. Space-based experiment LightBird is going to measure large angular scale signal, not small angular scale. So it's not a good resolution, but have good sensitivity and a lot of frequency channels. And it's from space. So it's very useful to get to low L signals, mainly the gravitational wave signal. And finally, we have the ground-based CMB experiment currently at the proposal stage called CMB-S4. With these experiments in hand now, let us ask, how well can we model patchy reionization? So when I talk about patchy reionization, what I'm going to tell you now is, what do I mean by patchy reionization? I was talking to you about reionization history. I was talking to you about electron density as a function of redshift. So let's take this a very simple example. Let me take a single reionization history shown in the right-hand side plot by this black solid line, which is telling you how it is a fraction of electron in ionized form as a function of redshift. So by redshift of around 6, everything is ionized, okay? This is free. And this particular measurement is very consistent with our all observables which we have, several measurements which we have made until date, as you can see, by these arrows and two error bars from Planck and this. So now the question is, if I give you this signal, if we can measure reionization history very well, is it sufficient to understand the epoch of reionization? And the answer to this question is no, because there is also a part called the morphology of electron density, which will play a key role. So here I'm trying to now show you that what happens when reionization is driven by halos of, say, masses 10 raised to 8 solar mass, and halos of masses 10 raised to 10 solar masses. So the 10 raised to 8 solar mass is the left-hand side panel, the top, and the one for 10 raised to 10 solar masses is the one panel in the bottom. So what you can see that even if for both reionization started at the same time and ended at the same time, the tau halo is are same, but the bubble sizes, that patches which are ionized, shown by these red blobs in these both the diagrams, are very different sizes. So when realization is driven by lighter halos, you can typically see the bubble sizes are small. In comparison, when your realization is driven by heavier halos and your bubble sizes are significantly big. So if your bubble sizes are very large, and then means the total fluctuation I have in the electron density is much larger in comparison to when I have bubble sizes very small. And that's the plot which you are seeing here as a function of halo masses in different color. Y-axis, you are seeing the RMS fluctuation in the electron density, and in x-axis, you are seeing the redshift. What you can see here is that as you go to when realization is driven by heavier halos, you tend to produce more fluctuations in the electron density. And that's going to have definitely a signature in the cosmic microwave background, which I was talking to you about. We cannot miss this effect. So let's now at first ask, what is the effect of this patchiness on the KZ power spectrum?
Wait, Asubhadi, can I ask, sure. Is there anything else that would be degenerate with this? I mean, like, so if you change, you know, parameters, like the fraction of the ionizing photons that escape, I mean, things like this, you know, can you also?
Indeed, it will be. I will show you a much detailed result on this. How the parameters is actually, so when I'm saying, I'm talking about bubbles, these are more like effective quantities. These are actually depends on the critical things you're mentioning about, like how much is the escape fraction? Is there a redshift dependence of that? Is there a halo mass dependence on that? Those all things also comes together in your signature. But unfortunately, we don't have so much probe or information to study from the power spectrum only. So then we need some much simpler parameterization. I will soon talk about, a bias parameter to basically capture these quantities. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks.
So now the point is that as of now, whatever I told you, if I want to summarize, I'm just telling you that even if I know when realization happened and I know how long it took for the realization process, these two informations are not sufficient to understand the epoch of realization. There's another degree of freedom. It is that how much patchiness is there. Now let's ask this question. What is the impact of this patchiness on KZ power spectrum? So here I'm showing you at first a map of KZ signal simulated for a homogeneous realization when there is no anisotropies in the distribution along every line of sight of halo of tau. So you basically have a constant halo of tau. Universe gets realized instantaneously. But for the same value of tau in both left-hand side plot and the right-hand side plot, what you can see that at small scales, you have significantly smooth or less fluctuation for homogeneous signal. In comparison to the scenario when you have patchy signal, your map looks very different. And that's the signature you want to measure. So to measure such a quantity, we really need good you need experiments which can resolve small angular scales with high sensitivity. And that's why ground-based experiments such as advanced dipole, SPD3G, Simons Observatory, and CMBS4 will be excellent to measure this thing. Now let me show you how this signal will look for, how the KZ power spectrum map will look for different realization scenarios. Again, the value of optical depth for all these maps are same. But what is changing is that realization driven by different halo masses. Top one is from 10 raised to 8 solar mass, then 10 raised to 9 solar mass, and then 10 raised to 10 solar mass. Again, the behavior is pretty similar, is that the bubble sizes or the sizes of the patches are typically tend to be bigger when the halos are heavier than when the scenario when the halos are small or lighter. And the impact of this signature, you can see, you can calculate in the power spectrum, KZ power spectrum. I'm showing you here the KZ power spectrum in the y-axis as a function of multiple L in the x-axis. The dashed line shows the CMB signal, less CMB signal, which is damping, so say damping is going down. You have KZ signal from patchy ionization for three different scenarios, 10 to 8 solar mass, 10 to 9 solar mass, and 10 to 10 solar mass. As you can see, that the power is slightly higher for where the reionization is driven by heavier halos, the black line, than the blue line. And when the reionization is driven by homogeneous reionization, the signature, the amplitude is pretty low. That's the magenta curve. But now let's change these parameters and let's ask how well can we characterize KZ power spectrum amplitude for these three parameters. Sorry, one is typical ZRE or the value of tau. Another is the width of reionization, delta Z. Another is parameter is this minimum halo mass, which is driving the reionization. So here I'm showing a matrix plot. So this is a complicated plot. So I'll take some time in explaining and ask me any questions that you if you have. So in the left-hand side, let's focus on the top panel, which is obtained for optical depth 0.054 for three different reionization histories shown in the left-hand side plot of QH2 as a function of redshift. You can see for these three, the value of the delta Z is different. So for going from 2.3 to 0.98. In the middle panel, I'm showing you a matrix plot where we are changing the value of delta Z, as you can see from the left-hand side plot, and the value of minimum halo mass in the y-axis. And in each of these matrix element, we have mentioned the value of KZ power spectrum at LF3000. What you see now, the interesting feature is that as you go to high values of delta Z, KZ power and at a constant value of halo mass, let's take a horizontal line in this matrix diagram, you increase the power spectrum signal. Let's say from 0.58, you go up to 1.38. Same thing can happen if you are have a constant value of delta Z and you are changing the halo masses. And as a result, you can see you can again increase the amplitude of the KZ signal by having the same reionization history, but just different minimum halo masses. And as a result, there is a line of degeneracy between these two sides. Whether when you make an observation, let's say you measure 0.8, you will not, unless you really capture this effect, you will not know whether it is coming from a wider reionization scenario driven by smaller halos, or a reionization scenario driven by heavier halos, but a narrow or a fast epoch of fast process of reionization. So there is this degeneracy, which is there and need to capture it. I'm showing in the right-hand side plot, top panel, again, there's something similar as a function of halo masses, how much signal is there for different values of delta Z. And you can clearly see there's a monotonic increase in the power as you go from reionization driven by lighter halos to heavier halos. And this particular behavior is very consistent with change in the optical depth. It doesn't matter much. The values will matter, but the trend will not. So the summary or the take-home message from this thoughts are that the older belief which he had that the reionization and to understand the KZ signal, we need the typical time where reionization happened and how fast the process are. That is not sufficient. We have another additional degrees of freedom called the patchiness, which we need to take into account.
So sorry. Kier raised his hand. Yeah. You want to go ahead, Kier?
Thanks, Neil. Perhaps you'll come onto this later on, but is there a physical relation between the width of reionization and the halo mass? Like in terms of an underlying physical model, the duration of reionization is obviously being driven by some physical things. One of those may indeed be the halo mass that's driving reionization. And
so here in our analysis, we have taken both the free parameters. So we say that we take tau value constant given by, let's say, CMB experiments. And then we want to understand how much freedom we have in the patchiness by changing the minimum halo mass. But if you think about it physically, let me just discuss about it. if our reincarnation is driven by heavier halos, what happens is basically you still may be starting early. You have few big patches. This is a good scenario. You see this image, okay? Both of them are starting at the same time. Initially, amount of reincarnation happening for the heavier case is not much. But then suddenly kicks in around a shift of 8 to 10, something like that, which is significant part is patchier and ionized. And then it's quickly catch up to the end by a shift of 6, everything is completely reionized.
Yeah.
That's the line of degeneracy you have. I'll soon show you a plot on that.
But there's a few minutes. There's a degeneracy in how it manifests in the KSZ, naively looking at this plot, it seems that a lighter minimum halo mass would give a shorter reionization process because there's more, presumably you've got more bubbles initiated by the halos, and so they overlap more quickly.
Yeah, but that's not necessary because you have this, as the parameter which Neil was mentioning in the beginning, you have this escape fraction, and that's a free parameter we have. We do not really know it pretty well.
Yeah.
So you have so much uncertainty to play with, to basically match with a few observables, that you have a lot of degrees of freedom.
Yeah, that's
the issue.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
So while you're here, let me ask something also. So on these scales of like L of like 3000 or so, does the patchy reionization dominate the KSZ power spectrum?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so low redshift, one or two. Well, I mean, I was just wondering if clusters or galaxies at redshift one or two on these scales, if they are negligible or similar.
Yeah, sure. These are contaminations to me. We need to subtract that out. Exactly. So the low redshift KZ part, I'm now right now talking about theoretical signal from KZ part only from reionization. But then you have to add the contaminations coming from several sides. You have a low redshift contamination, which you need to model. Indeed. Which is comparable of this value, which is about 2 microkelvin square, 2 to 3 microkelvin square around these values.
Oh, okay. So the amplitude is similar to what you're showing here from the patchy reionization.
And that's why it's in modeling. I completely agree.
I see. And for the shape of that power spectrum,
it's also flat.
It's also flat on these scales.
It's also typically flat on these scales. But there are hopes because we can do cross correlation studies. We can do tomographic beams of galaxy surveys and cross correlate with KAC to take out some of the signals. Those hopes are there.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll tell you about one of our results from data. But in future, this is the plan. Like when we really want to measure patchy KAC, we will go for optimal estimators, which can suppress low Z contaminations.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, thanks. So I'll proceed here. So let's see now, if patchy generation is so important, then what is its impact on the observable, which I was talking to you about for some time. So DLKZ, sorry for writing the short form, is basically L into L plus 1 over 2 pi times CL. This is a short notation for the power spectrum. So a very well-known relation, which we are using for almost a decade now, is to how to connect KZ observed signal with the parameter space of epoch of reionization. And our standard belief has shown us that it depends upon the mid value of reionization, the Z bar, and the width of reionization called delta Z. But I've shown you right in my last slide that this expansion is not sufficient for understanding KZ signal. So now we have an additional piece. So I'm showing you now a new relation where this additional piece shown in red box is the KZ bias parameter, which is defined as the amount of power in the KZ signal over the cold dark matter distribution for the same realization. And that, when you use that quantity for different reionization scenarios and patchiness, I'm showing you a plot here. In y-axis is the bias of KAC, as a function of delta Z width, what you can see here is that as realization becomes more patchy, so you try to see different lines, different colors, okay? So 10 raised to 8 is blue line, black is, 10 raised to 9 is black line, and 10 raised to 10 is green line. So when realization is very patchy, the bias parameter is larger. And its bias parameter also increases when you have a higher value of delta Z. So this means if I want to now interpret my measurement, so a CMB observation will give me the left-hand side of this quantity, DLKZ at L of 3000. And now I need to correctly infer the physical processes which are going on. So what we find is that this new relationship which you have obtained is written in terms of tau, which can be a direct input from the Planck results. And then we can have a measurement jointly between all these three parameters, the tau, delta Z, and this new parameter called KZ bias parameter, to understand KZ signal, not only through the reionization history, but also by capturing some part of its morphology, not the complete part, because we are just talking about the power spectrum. There are some more informations which one can explore. But just from the power spectrum, if you use this bias parameter, we can get something better, possibly. Let me tell you how accurate this relationship is. Here I'm showing you a plot of our simulation and comparison that with this fitting form given in the below, and the relative error of that I am showing you here for different halo masses, minimum halo masses, and different scenarios of reionization. As you can see, that this is not a very bad fit. This relationship is pretty good. I mean, within 10% or some places it is bad, but within a wide range of reionization scenarios, we can use this new scaling relationship. It is at the same level of accuracy as Nick Battaglia's paper. And this can be used for the upcoming CMB experiments to measure KZ bias parameter. But what about with the current measurements? We already have some measurements. Can we use this to already constrain something on the KZ bias parameter? So very nice timing that when we are writing this paper, SPD released this data, right at et al. 2021. But they claim that the first measurement of KZ signal from reionization from the SPT data. I'm showing you the SPT map in the top panel and the corresponding power spectrum, which is measured after subtracting several contaminations. So one of them, as Neil mentioned, is the low rate shift KZ. So we fit it by the Shaw et al. Model. Then we have contaminations from star forming galaxies, foregrounds. We subtract all of them by taking some fitting form of the models. Then we have a signal. And when we do that with our new parameterization, with the SPT plus Planck, you see the red lines. Please focus on the red lines for the joint estimation of tau, delta Z, and the KZ bias parameter. The values of, so main take home message from here, you can see that all the extreme patchy scenarios are already constrained from Planck SPT observation, which is good. That means we do, why it is good, I'll tell you later. Stay with me for some time. But this means our extremely patchy scenarios of reionizations are already kind of constrained, because you can see that extremely high values of the bias parameter are not allowed by the data any further. Then what do? We do a forecast. By keeping the mean value of our simulation the same, injected values, same as what we have found in the SPT results, and repeat our forecast for Planck plus SPT pole and Simons Observatory goals for sensitivity, and for shown in blue, and for Lightbird and CMB S4 shown in magenta. So you can see in future, with the help of high angular resolution CMB experiments, and also with Lightbird, with the improvement in the measurement of tau in cosmic variance limit, which is about 0.002, we can get to a much further improvement in the reionization history and measure properly the KZ bias parameters jointly with the delta Z and tau. Certainly, you can understand that this joint estimation is going to reduce our previous estimates, which you have made about delta Z estimation, because there is a degeneracy between the delta Z and KZ bias parameter. But I think this is a much, much better prescription to understand also the morphology of electrons density during the epoch of reionization. Going forward, I don't think I have much time. So how much time do I have?
I guess maybe like 10, 15 minutes.
Okay, good. Okay, fine. So the last few, about 10 minutes which I have, let me now tell you about another probe which I mentioned, which is B-mode polarization. So I've shown you what we can do with about patch reionization from KZ. Now it's time for talking about B-modes. Just a recap again, what I'm going to talk about is I'm going to talk about this signal called scattering, which is important at large angular scales or at low L, which is basically coming because your electrons are seeing a local quadrupole. And because of Thomson scattering, there's a linear polarization induced, and that can generate some additional secondary polarization signal. And that's the quantity we're going to talk about now. So as you can see from this expression, this CLBB depends upon the amount of fluctuations in the electron density. So let's ask how much fluctuations there in the electron density for different reionization scenarios, basically driven by just different halo masses. So here I'm showing you a plot of RMS fluctuations in the electron density, delta square E is dimensionless, as a function of modes K for different values of Z, and minimum halo masses. Dashed line shows for 10 raised to 8 solar mass, dotted line, sorry, and the dashed line shows for 10 raised to 11 solar mass. If you focus on the red line, what you can see is that when reionization is driven by heavier halos, same story, your amount of patchiness in the electron density is large. So the power spectrum is also having a higher value. And this means that according to this formula, if I have more power in PEE in this form, then I am actually going to induce more secondary B-mode polarization if there is more patchiness in the electron density during the epoch of reionization. So now let's do the same plot again, where I'm now showing you a similar matrix plot, but now for B-mode polarization. What you can see here is that, again, as you change the value of delta Z in the x-axis, let's focus on the top panel middle plot. You're changing the value of delta Z in the x-axis, and you are changing the value of minimum halo mass in the y-axis. Again, if I keep a constant value of the minimum halo mass and I increase delta Z, what I find is that my amount of B-mode polarization signal at L of 200 is significantly higher as I go to higher delta Z value. And a similar conclusion you can also draw if your reionization epoch is small, that is delta Z is small, but your reionization is driven by extremely massive systems. So the amount of fluctuation in the B-mode polarization is going to increase with these two parameters. And this is again true for different values of tau. The amplitude increases with higher value of tau, but the overall conclusion remains the same. So now let me show you a new scaling, no more a new scaling relationship, but a scaling relationship, which is for the first time we are obtaining for B-mode polarization, which you can use now to interpret the B-mode signal, which is coming from reionization. And you can see there is now an additional parameter again called the B-mode bias parameter, which is shown over here in the plot below as a function of delta Z in the x-axis and bias parameter square in the y-axis. Again, as you go to higher halo masses, something like the green plots in here, you can see that they have a much higher value of the bias parameter. Then you can expect about a factor of 3, then you can compare with the scenario when reionization is driven by lighter halos. And this bias parameter also increases, not much, but slowly increases with the change in the value of delta Z. So you have now two very different probes to understand the epoch of reionization. One is KZ, other is this high, this large angular scale, a low LBB signal. And both are actually probing the same epoch, but in a complementary way, which I find very interesting. So let's ask how accurate is our this fitting form. So I'm trying to show you this fitting form accuracy again. And again, within about 10 to 15% accuracy, our fitting form agrees with our simulations. And we can use these for the upcoming experiments such as Simons Observatory and CMBS4. But given so, now let's ask a very important question. How this CMB B-mode polarization signal compares with the primordial gravitational wave signal? One of the main science goal for upcoming CMB experiments. So the primordial gravitational wave generates B-mode polarization, which can have a different values of the tensor to scalar ratio denoted by R. So here, this black line shows the value of R for 5 × 10⁻⁴. And on top, I have plotted the signal from patchy reionization for different reionization scenarios. So the one which is the shaded in the grayish region is obtained using limber approximation. And the one which is in the yellow region is obtained without any limber approximation. Other way. Yellow one is limber, the gray one is exact solution. And this cyan curve you are seeing is the amount of CLBB which comes from lensing, and we have applied a delensing of about 50%. So what is the main take home message from this plot is at high L, above L of 100 to 200, there is a significant amount of overlap between the primordial gravitational wave signal and the patchy reionization signal if the reionization is driven by extremely heavier systems. So the question now is it going to be a problem? So a similar conclusion was also studied by another work by the CISA group almost in the same time by Roy et al. So here is a plot where he has shown different values of primordial gravitational wave signal for R of 10⁻², 10⁻³, and 10⁻⁴. He has compared the results from Dovkin and Smith 2009, that's in green, with our model 2019 Mukherjee et al. And with their results from a completely independent simulations falls on top of our results. So both of our results independently has obtained the same amount of power given the similar reionization scenarios. And different plots are currently, the data points are showing current constraints on CLBB from several experiments. So now the question we can ask, how bad this contamination is going to be? Is it an obstacle for the primordial gravitational waves? So the impact of the contamination to tensor to scalar ratio is that if you do a joint estimation, like let me go back two slides and tell you. Why we're actually saving is because the shape of the power spectrum for CLBB from primordial gravitational wave in black is very different from the shape of the power spectrum because of patchy reionization. So if we can do measurements at multiple L values, we can use this unique shape of gravitational waves. We can actually distinguish between the contamination from patchy reionization and measure gravitational wave signal uniquely or without much contamination. So let me show you this plot. Here I'm showing you a plot. Please focus on the left-hand side plot. Here, in the x-axis, you have minimum halo mass in log scale. And delta R is your bias in the value of tensor to scalar ratio because of the contamination from patchy reionization. What you can see is that for Simons Observatory, the error bars are shown in solid line, which is significantly larger than the bias you can see for different L mean values in circle, star, and diamond symbols. So this means that if my reionization is driven by extremely heavier halos, I have about 33% bias in the value of R, but it is still less than almost comparable with the CMB S4 error bars, but way subdominant in comparison to the Simons Observatory error bars. in future, if you see the right-hand side plot, comparison of delta R over sigma R from that particular mission for different passage generation scenario, 10 raised to 8 solar mass and 10 raised to 11 solar mass for in magenta and red for different missions now. So Lightbird, Simons Observatory, CMB S4, CMB Bharat, this is an Indian initiative for a space-based CMB mission, and PICO, which is a concept by US for a future space-based CMB mission. As you can see, for until Simons Observatory, we are pretty safe with even from the extreme reincarnation scenarios, we do not expect even half a sigma bias. From CMB S4, things can be a bit contamination can be heavy. If reincarnation is driven by heavier halos, but I have shown you just a few slides back that extremely patchy scenarios are not likely the case, at least from the current measurement of KZ, this will improve. So a joint study is significantly help for CMB S4 to mitigate the contamination from patchy reincarnation. And in future, of course, from CMB Bharat and PICO, these kind of measurements are extremely important and can be a showstopper if it is not taken into account properly to measure primordial gravitational signal. And what about the error impact on the error bar? Because as I told you that it is best what you should do, we should marginalize over all these plots, possible family of curves coming from patchy reionization. And if you do so, you have a larger error bar. So here I'm showing you our estimation of the recovered value of R for Simons Observatory without tau in magenta and with tau without Simons Observatory without tau value in magenta and Simons Observatory with tau in blue. So you can see the slightly larger error bar. And the same story is for CMB S4 without 8 tau for in cyan, and in red for with a tau. So this means that even if we have a contamination, that contamination is not likely to be a showstopper for Simons Observatory. And the good part is that if we go to slightly higher L, like L of 200 and so for CLBP, we may be able to make a measurement of the patchy reincarnation signal in jointly with the KZ signal, which will be very interesting because they are complementary to the same epoch of the universe. So with this, I'll now towards the end of my talk, I have a few minutes left. I'll tell you that I have started with this plot that one side I have a parameter space of epoch of reionization. The other side I have a parameter space of observable probes I have, KZ, B mode polarization and reionization bump. And these two are now going to be connected by these fitting forms which I've shown you. And there is a significant room of degeneracy between these parameters, which you need to explore properly to get a reliable measurement. In future, this is something we are currently ongoing work that with KZ and BB jointly, further improvements are possible. So with this, I will end my talk giving you a few take home messages that the epoch of reionization can be probed by E-mode polarization, patchy KZ and secondary B-mode signal, and cross correlation with other probes. The amplitude of KZ and secondary B mode polarization are related to the duration of reionization, optical depth, and patchiness in electron density. CMB mission can constrain reionization history and patchiness both by this joint estimation and the help of this KZ bias parameter and BB bias parameter. And finally, I couldn't talk about it, but 21 centimeter will also probe the typical bubble sizes. So the cross correlation with CMB will be a very powerful probe. So I think we are going to learn a lot about physical processes during reionization from the upcoming CMB experiments. With this, I'll end my talk. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. So thanks very much, Supriti. That was awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Dan. Okay, we've had a few questions already, but I see we have like another couple of minutes, maybe more time. So are there any further questions for Suvadeep?
Uh, Hi, Subhadeep. This is Latham. What does set the error bar for the tensor to scalar ratio R for SO?
Yeah, it's set primarily by
So I didn't catch actually your answer, Subhadeep.
No, I didn't understand. So you're asking what is the main, what is the minimum error bar of the Simons Observatory sigma but, R for tensor to scalar ratio?
What does set the size of the error bar? So you were saying, for example, for Simons Observatory, it's going to be about R of 10 to the minus 3. And why is it that's set by cosmic variance or dust? Or
partly by noise. So it's mainly still by instrument noise. If we improve the instrument noise, it can go slightly deeper, better. So with Simons Observatory instrument noise, we can be up something like 1.2 or one, about 110 times 10 to the minus 3 is our error bar. With CMB S4, we can reduce by almost a factor of 2. So our currently, we are showstopper is still instrument noise. But remember, these error bars can increase slightly if the foreground contaminations are very heavy at low end. So these are not talking, I'm not talking yet about the sigma R marginalized over all foreground contaminations. That's going to play a role.
Okay, thank you.
Any further? So Kier has his hand raised again. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Could you remind me how the bias parameter that you defined, how it maps to physical parameters like the halo mass?
Let's talk about the KZ one. So this is a very much an effective parameter, which depends on what is the escape fraction. So the main quantity which drives it is how my escape fraction changes as a function of halo mass and redshift. So what I do is, we take the pressure shifter formalism, right? Excursion set approach. We say that given how much collapse fraction I have of objects of a certain, above certain minimum mass, I'm going to set as that sets a scale to me, if collapse fraction, and I'm going to say that what is the ionization fraction I have, that is going to be at least the halos should be completely ionized bigger than that scale, right? So the zeta function times the F collapse should be greater than 1. But this zeta is now not a free parameter, which is just constant throughout the universe, but it depends on the value of masses. Because you can have extremely clumpy systems where it takes time for the photons to escape. So as Neil was mentioning right at the beginning, that you have a escape fraction, which is not very well known and can be different for different masses and redshifts. And these three, that how zeta function varies with redshift, how zeta function varies with mass, this together is combined in this KZ bias parameter. And also in delta Z, it's not like disjoint.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So why we are using this formula is a very simple reason. So if you want to use zeta function and their redshift dependence, you have to run a simulation. Running a simulation takes hours in a cluster. When we need to do quick parameter estimation. So what we are proposing is you start with the physical parameter space, you connect with an effective parameter, which you can very quickly estimate from data, and that's your reduced parameter space of tau, delta z, and bias parameters.
But is there a degeneracy in that mapping from this effective bias to all the ingredients in the simulation?
Yeah, sure. So there is a direct relation. I can show you a plot. I can send you a paper where you have shown that how these three effective parameters depends on the mode, on the physical parameters. So, but as I told you, it is basically through this mass dependence of the escape fraction and the ratio dependence. So just think about it now like a field, okay? Think zeta is a field of two parameters, M and Z. And you need to take into account that properly to calculate the corresponding patchiness.
Yeah. So you put some sort of bound on the bias parameter. It excludes the most extreme.
You see, this part is almost goes, no?
What could you say something about what is excluded by that?
So 10 raised to like 10 raised to 10 solar mass systems are ruled out.
Okay.
Which is very good news, because this is a good news for people working on primordial gravitational measurements. That this means I don't have a very heavy contamination.
Okay. Yeah. And what is the B equals zero limit?
B equal to
homogeneous.
C. That's right.
Yeah.
B equal to zero limit is homogeneous reionization scenarios.
Okay, cool. Cheers.
Okay, so let's stop here in the interest of time. So thanks again to Adeep.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, stop the recording, I guess. My guests, and I'll just see you all next week, back at the regular time. So long, everyone.
Okay, thank you.